Yeehaw. So we just made it here like an hour and a little bit ago, so we're barely settled. This particular talk, I'm giving three talks this week, one tonight. Tomorrow night we're having the screening of Jones Plantation here in this room. And I'm excited about it. I just got word that the director might not make it because he's under the weather. So we'll see if that works. But it will be shown here anyway. And then the next night I have another talk, and the next night I have another talk. Of the three, this first one is mainly intended for people who already know who I am and who already know what I talk about and who are already voluntarists. Now, you don't have to be, because a lot of this overlaps and is true of kind of any branch of the freedom movement or anything like that. Some of it will make more sense if you are already familiar with what I do. This will focus heavily on the people who may perhaps be feeling a little bit of frustration when trying to talk to the rest of the world and trying to get the rest of the world to listen to such radical, extreme, kook fringe things like be nice to other people and peaceful coexistence and horrible, dangerous ideas like that. So with that in mind, when it comes to the people trying to spread the message of freedom, I thought you all could probably use a pep talk. So here goes. Love conquers all, except when it doesn't, which is most of the time. The truth will prevail, except when it won't, which is pretty often. Failure, people, is absolutely an option. And it happens a lot. Desperate times call for desperate measures, which almost never work. But if you just believe in yourself and are persistent and passionate about what you believe, you will probably mostly just annoy and alienate people. Contrary to what Disney may teach, reality doesn't give a crap what you and I want. And reality is not going to bend itself to help us out. Either we bend ourselves and our choices and our tactics and our behavior and our words to match reality, or we fail. And a whole lot of the time I see advocates of freedom failing constantly and getting frustrated and disappointed and depressed and angry and resentful and then hopeless and bitter. And then they all live miserably ever after. Thanks for coming to my pep talk. Okay, just kidding. Well, I'm not exactly kidding about all of that, but I am kidding about being done. I have some more to say. It is absolutely true that reality doesn't give a crap about your feels, and it doesn't matter how much you care. And that's something that's really hard to deal with, because the more passionately you care about something, the more important it is to you, the harder you're going to try and the more it's going to matter to you what the outcome is. And because of reality, and more specifically human psychology, there's this kind of weird phenomenon that the more you care about something and try to talk to other people about it, the less likely they are to want to hear it. Because you'll be in what I refer to as evangelical mode. Because you really want them to understand this. And before they have any idea what you have to say, they perceive you as this weirdo trying to talk them into something they don't already believe in, and they get defensive, and it gets awkward, and they get uncomfortable, and they're looking for the first excuse to run out the door or jump out a window or something to get away from you. And that happens even if they have no idea what you're trying to say, just because of the evangelical demeanor. I mean, what are Jehovah's Witnesses universally known for? Everybody hates them. Now, that's sad. I mean, I don't share their belief system, but think how sad that is, that what they are known for is they go door to door trying to tell people stuff that they think are going to save their souls, And what everybody thinks of them is, oh God, I hate it when they show up at my door. If that's the response you get when you're trying to talk about things you really care about, yeah, that's frustrating. That's not fun. I've been a voluntarist now for 27 years and have done more than my fair share of evangelizing and getting that response. And yeah, it's really frustrating. And now it's frustrating to watch lots of other people, pro-freedom people, constantly shooting themselves in the foot and defeating themselves because they don't want to do anything to change themselves and their approach. They want to zealously preach at the world as they've always done and then mope and whine about it when that doesn't make everybody agree with them. Now, reality isn't fair and reality isn't nice, because you can absolutely understand that other people have a belief system that's destructive and immoral and hypocritical, and it's not even good for them. It doesn't matter how right you are and how wrong they are if they can't hear what you're saying. And the more right you know you are, the more zealous you're likely to be, and the less likely they are to listen to you. So let me ask you a question. Who here considers them pretty good when it comes to driving on snow and ice? Good. A few, but not most of you. And no, I'm not having a stroke. There was an actual reason that I asked that. The relevance of this will be clear in a moment. Who here is pretty bad at driving on snow and ice? Okay. So, and there's some that didn't say either, so that's fine. As mere mortal human beings, when we do something over and over again until it becomes second nature, we do things automatically. We don't think them out ahead of time. We repeat patterns of behavior until they just happen by themselves and we're not even paying any attention to them. For example, if you're driving a car in most situations and you want to stop, you press the brake pedal. And when you want to go or go faster, you press the gas pedal. However, as some of you have probably learned the hard way, there are situations in which that doesn't work. Someone who is driving in the snow who's not used to it, if they try to slow down and the car starts to slide, what do? Automatically, involuntarily, without even thinking about it, they press harder on the brakes. The wheels already stopped spinning. They're not going to go any slower than stopped. But your brain is wired to think, that's the stop thing, stop. And the people who get used to driving in the snow realize you have to override that automatic response, that the pattern you've always done. And the first thing you do if the car slides is let off the brake all the way and then gently apply it, not enough to lock the tires again, but enough to apply brakes so that there's a little bit of friction. Downshift. And downshift helps too, because then the wheels can't lock completely. But it's counterintuitive. If this is always what you've done to stop, you're just going to do that harder. Same thing is true in the other direction. If you're used to driving in the snow and you're going up a hill and you're slowing down, press the gas harder. No, now you're spinning. The friction coefficient just dropped to nothing and you slide into a ditch. And it doesn't matter how much you wanted that to work. It doesn't even matter if your life depends on it. Now, having grown up in Pennsylvania and having been on a snow removal crew, I've seen a lot of people in cars in ditches who they just can't believe a reality they're not used to. So like me and my friend will be dragging him out of a ditch. Okay, we finally got you out to the point where you get a little bit of traction. Do not press on the gas pedal. You'll just spin and slide sideways and be in there. And they start to move a little bit and go, whum, zink, bump, back into the ditch. And we do it three more times, don't, and finally we say, get out, let us do it. Because your brain is automatically going to do the only thing you know how to do, and you're going to make it worse. Well, that's basically what I see the freedom movement doing most of the time. Well-intentioned, trying really hard, trying the thing they know how to do, and making it worse. And I totally sympathize. Not trying to make fun of people for doing that. But if you don't rewire your brain and how you do things, all your good intentions and really caring about it may be doing exactly nothing. You have to be able to make your brain overrule your instincts. You have to learn how to actually accomplish something, and it may be completely counterintuitive. It may be something that feels unnecessary and stupid, and why do I have to do this? Why can't I just explain, here are the principles of freedom, believe me? Why does that never work? Well, my first question to you is, does it matter that it never works? Are you content with doing something that never works and then being mad at the rest of the world and say, I tried everything and there's no getting through to people? Because I know a whole, and I totally understand, I totally sympathize with all the people who do that. Like, I've tried for years to get through to people. Nobody pays any attention. They don't know how to think. I give up. I'm going to go live in the woods somewhere. I sympathize, but the reality is that failure is not because the pro-freedom people are unable to change other people. It's because most pro-freedom people are unable to change themselves and train themselves to do things that actually work. And often that means training yourself to do the opposite of what your usual habits and instincts tell you to do. You need to release the brake pedal, as it were, and then approach it in a way that actually accomplishes something. And what you want and how much you care about it makes no difference to reality. You know, as I often say, you can jump out of a plane and you can want and you can need a parachute on, but if you didn't put one on before you jumped out, you're kind of in trouble. Reality doesn't care. And huge numbers of people have been harmed or killed because they did what comes naturally, and reality didn't care what came naturally to them. Reality just did what reality does, and that includes human psychology. So, my somewhat rude advice to voluntarists, or sort of anyone in the freedom movement, is don't just be yourselves. And I apply that to myself. The things I now teach and the things I cover in, like, Candles in the Dark, the seminar thing I made, and Making Anarchy Mainstream, none of that came to me naturally. None of that was just sort of secondhand automatic. I did everything the evangelical way that didn't work a zillion billion times. And then I started to notice people's reaction, and I started to notice the things they would hear and understand in and amongst a whole bunch of, like, well, they didn't understand this, and they had some weird random response to that that didn't make any sense, and they didn't even notice that they were inconsistent. So over time, I had to reteach my own brain to do what works, which was completely counterintuitive a lot of the time. And if you don't do that, all of your zeal and your good intentions and your passion and your determination and your persistence will not only fail a lot of the time, but might actually make things worse than if you had never tried to do anything. Because if there's somebody, if you are sort of the first person that some random person out in the world, they're the first person they heard these ideas from. If you come across as annoying and crazy and off the wall, they will associate those ideas with how badly you botched it up. Even though, you know, that's logically irrelevant, that's still an association they're likely to make. Now, like I said, I cover a whole bunch more than this in Candles in the Dark, but I'm going to cover some of the main points and some of the main ways in which I see voluntarists constantly defeating themselves. And I'm going to cover some ways of how to not do that, hopefully. But a lot of this will be about working on yourself instead of working on them. And by the way, I want to completely acknowledge, if you understand freedom and the person you're talking to believes all the authoritarian rhetoric, their belief system is totally wrong and your belief system is totally right, but that doesn't mean you can get through to them. And that's why I accidentally have gotten an inadvertent education in human psychology in the past 27 years when I realized, oh, logic and evidence and reason doesn't work when you're going against what somebody's always believed, which is kind of frustrating and ridiculous. And when it doesn't work, it's really easy for pro-freedom people to say, well, then nothing will work. Like I explained it, 1 + 1 = 2. Like, if they didn't get that, what could they possibly get? And it's very easy to feel hopeless and frustrated. Like, if reason doesn't do it, what else is there? But there are ways to tiptoe around the minefield of the human mind so that they can hear your reason. Because the problem isn't that your reasoning isn't good. Well, it might be that. But assuming you know how to do like logic and reason, the problem isn't that. The problem is that they can't hear you. They never heard a word you said. Their brain was mangling and misinterpreting everything you said because they weren't ready to hear what you were saying. And it doesn't matter how concise and precise your words are, if their brain is not ready to think about that, to actually look at the concept, you can't do anything. Because this isn't like telling somebody how to change the oil in their car. It's not just, I'm going to explain to you some practical, like physical steps you take. This is taking a paradigm about how they see the world and humanity and morality and society and how people should behave and telling them, by the way, you're completely wrong about almost everything. Let me tell you why. As soon as they know that you fundamentally disagree with them, they go into defensive shutdown mode. And by the way, so would you and so would I. That's the natural response anybody has to an idea that sounds to them like, your whole belief system sucks. If they hear it that way, their ears are shut, you are an enemy, they're trying to either defeat you in a debate or just get away from you. And neither of those is conducive to them thinking about something. So you need, if you want them to actually hear the important things you have to say, you have to learn how to manage the irrational, weird phenomenon that is the human mind. So, the first thing, these are in no particular order, but I'm going to go through a few points of things that I watch a whole lot of people, and this absolute, all of these applied to myself for many years. First one I want to talk about is recognizing your enemy. It is obvious and simple and natural to assume that if you believe this and somebody else believes something very contrary, not just something factual, but about how humanity should be organized. They believe in violent subjugation and mass extortion. They think that's okay. They vote for that. They advocate that. And you're in the position of trying to say, how about like peaceful coexistence and we're not like fighting over who gets to stomp on the other one? Like, can we do that? It is very easy to view that person as an enemy because on a practical basis, they kind of are. If they're personally advocating that you be robbed and violently dominated by a ruling class, that, in practical terms, kind of makes them your enemy. But you, if you want to get through to them, you need to train yourself to recognize that person isn't really the enemy. A crappy belief system that they were taught is the enemy. And that's holding down the real them that's underneath that, that's inside them. Now, if you're talking to someone and they appear to all the way be a sociopath or something, like they're, yeah, I'll totally kill you and steal your stuff if I can get away with it. Don't try to talk them into anything. Go talk to somebody less bonkers. But there are a whole lot of people who have destructive beliefs, but the people aren't the enemy. Their crappy belief is the enemy. And if you don't keep this in mind when you're talking to them, you will talk to them like an enemy. And they will know you view them as an enemy. You just told them, okay, we're enemies, now let's have this discussion. Well, as soon as they knew, okay, this is me versus you, they're not trying to like openly, honestly hear you. They're trying to defeat you or escape you. Those are the two options when faced with an enemy, fight or flight. But if you can keep reminding yourself, this is a good person who means well, who on a day-to-day basis doesn't go around killing people and robbing people, but he's been taught this belief that goes against who he really is and against what he really believes and against how he behaves on a regular basis with his friends and neighbors and strangers. If you keep in mind the difference between the good person and the crap they were taught, then you can talk to the good person and gently have them look at the crap. Now, even then, even when you recognize the difference, they don't yet. They will associate themselves with their belief system because that's just what people do. So if you attack their belief system and say, your belief system is totally sucky and evil and destructive, I'm not insulting you. It's just your beliefs that completely suck. they're still going to be defensive. So the problem is you need to get them to be the ones who notice, wow, my belief systems suck. I remember coming to the point where I thought, wow, my belief systems suck, back when I was a statist. And I would oppose a whole bunch of authoritarian collectivist garbage, but I still believed in certain other authoritarian collectivist garbage, because we need to tax people for a military and police. And the more I looked at it and the closer I looked, I was like, wow, what a freaking hypocrite I am. This sucks. I'm telling them you don't get to rob me for whatever you think is for the common good, but for some reason I do get to vote for someone to rob you for what I think is common good. Well, that sucks. I was the only one capable of changing my beliefs. And this is a thing you have to keep in mind. You can't change somebody else's beliefs. You can't, nor should you be able to, because they have free will. You can do a whole bunch of things that puts them in a better position to be able to change their own beliefs, but you don't get to decide it for them, even if their beliefs are stupid and evil and whatever else. But practice doing some exercises that remind you the difference between the person and their beliefs. Let's say there was, like, there's a rumor going around, and somebody said, yeah, I saw that guy, like, punched a little kid yesterday. So there's this rumor going around, and you didn't. And then somebody comes up to you and goes, I can't believe you would do that. I think you're a horrible person, blah, 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 blah. If you know what happened and you know the lie that they believe, now you're in this weird position where you're like, that's the response you should have to what you think you're responding to. If I was actually what you thought I was, you should be pissed off and screaming at me. But I'm not. So it's not, you're not all mad at me because you're a bad person. You're mad at me because you're a good person who believes a lie. Every statist, well, there's some that are actual sociopaths. Other than them, every statist is a good person who believed a lie. And if you don't keep that in mind when you're talking to them, you're going to talk to them like they're an enemy, and then they're going to talk to you like you're an enemy, and guess how much you're going to accomplish after that. The goal when you're talking to an enemy is to defeat them. And if you're talking to somebody and thinking, I have to defeat this person, you already lost. If your goal is to help them out from under a lie they were taught that doesn't even match who they really are, then you might have a prayer. But you have to remind yourself of that, because that's going to affect how you talk to them. And it's not conducive to people listening to view them as an enemy and talk to them as an enemy. And you can say, well, they're advocating these horrible, like, authoritarian things, and this warmongering over here, and the war on drugs over here, and this nasty welfare state and the giant extortion racket. And yeah, they're advocating those things. And that wasn't their idea. They didn't grow up in like a free society of self-owning individuals and then go, you know what I really want to advocate is violent aggression against everybody I know. They were surrounded by that idea. They accepted it as what is, like almost all of us did. I know I did. Because that's all they know. It's all they've ever heard of. So even when they are literally direct cheerleaders for authoritarian evil, they're still not the enemy. Again, on a practical basis, you can say, well, yeah, they're cheering for the bad things to happen, so on a practical basis, they're the enemy. But they didn't choose that. They didn't decide that. They didn't objectively figure out statism on their own. Nobody does, because you can't, because it's utterly irrational. So next belief, or next point about this, is the idea of imposing your beliefs onto others. You believe A, I believe B, and I'm going to talk to you until you believe A. And it's very, very common. You know, it's probably 90% of the discussions between human beings is two people trying to tell the other people, here's what I think, and I'm going to keep saying this until you think it too. How often does that work? Like, how often do you see a debate where it starts, I really believe in this, well, I really believe in this diametrically opposed idea, and during the debate somebody goes, yeah, I was wrong, you were totally right, sorry about that. It doesn't ever happen because they're both in combat mode. and they're both trying to impose their beliefs on the other one. It doesn't work, and it's not necessary. If you view it as a combat of ideas, you're going to be trying to bludgeon their idea into submission. If you know how to view it as an interview, where you're trying to bring out of them what they believe, you don't have to make them believe anything, which is good because you can't make anybody believe anything. But, and this is something we cover in great detail in Candles in the Dark, almost everybody already has in them all of the voluntariest answers that you could give them, which means you don't have to teach them that stuff. They already know that stuff. Instead of having the goal of telling them that stuff, have the goal of getting them to tell you that stuff. And it may sound weird, it may sound impossible, or just sort of bizarre and counterintuitive, but that is absolutely possible. And that's what we teach in Candles in the Dark, is to get people to go, huh, and you'd have different lines of questioning and different scenarios until they go to the point where they go, yeah, I guess I have to believe that. And you never had to say anything about what you believe. You just knew how to ask questions until they gave the answer you wanted to tell them to begin with. Because if you just tell them it to begin with, that's not them. That didn't come from them. That's just you preaching at them. But if you can ask them and actually listen to them and bring out of them what they actually believe and get them to say, wow, yeah, well, I guess it's this, that is 1,000 times more important and 1,000 times more effective than just alienating them by trying to talk them into believing what you believe, which doesn't work. Now, there's another thing, like a lot of people in the freedom movement are weirdos who like to think. Shame on you. Nerd. And as you may have noticed, a lot of the world doesn't really like to think. But the people who are weird enough that we like to think about stuff and ponder philosophy and have discussions about all manner of bizarre things, that's the minority of the population. If you are in that segment of the population and you talk to other people as if they are, they're just going to want to run away. They don't want to talk about that stuff. They've never thought about it. It's uncomfortable. It's unfamiliar. It's weird. They don't enjoy that. They want to go watch sports ball on the TV and have nothing to do with you. And if you view them like, well, this is just data entry. If I can just type in these ideas to them really fast before they can get out of the room, then I'll convince them. And that's not how it freaking works. And if you think, well, I'll talk to them as if they're me, most of the time that doesn't work either because they're not you. And so many pro-freedom people decide that, well, yeah, there's some people who can get this, but most of the world never will because they don't care about it. Usually what they're actually saying is most of the world isn't going to get this, or I assume they're not going to get this, because when I talk to them as if I was talking to myself, I am talking to myself because they're not hearing me. Because it isn't data entry. But understanding how to talk to somebody whose mind works differently and who doesn't care about the things you care about and getting them to question things that, one, they've never questioned before, and two, they don't really have an incentive to question it because it's uncomfortable questioning things you've always believed, which is why most people don't like to do it. No, I have my beliefs, and I have what I do, and I have my job, and I have my life, and I have my whole view of reality, and if you do anything to mess it up, it's going to be uncomfortable, so leave me alone. And it's very tempting to assume, well, there's no getting through to those people. Even that isn't true. Now, there's an analogy I often use relating to slavery. You know, if you ask a crowd anywhere, how many people here are pro-slavery? Nobody says yes anymore. Guess what? The majority of people who say slavery is horrible and evil, they don't like to think about things either. They didn't come up with that on their own. They were surrounded by other people who said this is evil, and they went, yeah, you're right, that's evil. The huge herd followed that tiny minority that was saying this is freaking evil back when slavery was like openly happening. there was this small group of rebels saying, this has to end. This is horrible. This is as evil as you can get. This is intolerable. Back at the beginning, you had huge crowds of people like, well, that's just how it is. And now you have those same unthinking crowd followers, and they all know that slavery is bad. And it's not because they all figured it out. It's not because they're philosophical and thought about it. It's because the people who did think about it finally found a way to drag the rest of the herd into the bleeding obvious conclusion that slavery is a bad thing. But most of those people, had they been born in a different place at a different time, they'd be, slavery is just how it is. Or, yeah, you have to get on the cattle cars. Or you disobeyed the law, of course, like you said a bad thing about the king, of course you were drawn and quartered and your head was stuck up on the bridge. Duh, what did you think was going to happen? Those people are never going to be the leaders, they're never going to be the thinkers, but they will all be voluntarists without changing who they really are. And the thing is, us weirdos who like to think about stuff have to understand that their interests aren't the same and their thought patterns aren't the same. And so to get through to them, you have to use a different approach than if you're talking to a bunch of weirdos at Porkfest who like to have discussions about these things. A big part of that is the next point on my list. This is a thing that good teachers are really good at this. A lot of teachers are sucky at this. And a lot of normal people are really bad at it. Which is, when you're talking about something that you know a lot about, but you're talking about somebody who doesn't, are you able to sort of be in their shoes enough to know what it's going to sound like to them? And most of you have probably experienced something like this with a mechanic or something. If you're somebody who doesn't know anything about cars and engines and you go in, let's say it's at least an honest mechanic, but he's like, oh yeah, your timing chain did this and it's going to be that and you have to do this. And you're like, I understood three of those words. The rest, He knows it so well and he's so well versed in it that everything he said made perfect sense to himself. But he did a bad job of knowing his listener enough to know what the hell that was going to sound like to the other person. And a lot of pro-freedom people do that when they talk to people who've never thought about this stuff. They've never been interested in it at all. And they say, well, the non-aggression principle dictates that people don't know what that means. Most people don't know what that... To us, it's like, how do you not know aggression and then not aggression? Doesn't seem that complicated. But if they haven't thought about it and they haven't addressed it, you're speaking Swahili. And if you don't know how to understand what something's going to sound like to the other person, you can give this great eloquent explanation and to them it's just noise because they don't have the thought patterns to be able to process what you said. And I see a lot of voluntarists do this. I mean, I see people in all walks of life do this when they're trying to explain something that they know. Okay, so a big one on the list, being emotionally invested in the outcome of a discussion with somebody else. When it comes to something that is literally killing millions of people, which statism is, it's hard to act like it doesn't matter to you. It's hard to not be desperate and anxious and furious and angry and trying to shake the world by its neck to wake the hell up. Because literally on a daily basis, there are huge numbers of people suffering and dying as a direct result of this belief. And, you know, I'm sure everybody here knows that. Yes, that's going to make you frustrated and impatient. It makes me frustrated and impatient. The trouble is, if you're talking to somebody and you're emotionally invested in them agreeing, like, I have to quick say these words really fast so you agree and tell me I'm right and then I can go to the next person. Well, you never get to the next person. You never get past the first person because it doesn't work because of the weird psychological reaction people have to the evangelical in-your-face thing. I really want to tell you about this. It's really important. And so there's this weird, ironic approach that the less you seem to care about something, the more casual you are about it, like, hey, you take it or leave it, but here's what I think, the more likely other people are to listen to you, which is really counterintuitive and really dang weird. And I remember a very weird event that happened. I don't even remember the details, but it was so stunning. You know, back when I was usually in evangelical mode, I think it was in like in line in a supermarket or something, and somebody said something about, you know, some candidate or other. Huh, what do you think of him? And I just dropped something about, you know, I don't want anybody ruling either one of us, so I don't care about that whole game. And I got my thing to walk out, and the person followed me. It's like, wait, what? It's like, that was weird. That was the least I had ever tried to make somebody listen to me, and they followed me and tried to continue the conversation. I was like trying to get away from them, like, I have stuff to do, bye. Because they could tell I wasn't there to nag at them. I was just, here's what I think, bye. There was no threat to them. There was nothing they needed to fend it off. All they had to do was stand there and watch me walk away. And instead, they were like, wait, what did you say? And that struck me as so hysterical of all the effort I've put into like trying to explain these things and articles and videos and stuff. Realizing that the less you seem to care about something, the easier it is for other people to hear you. In a lot of cases, not always true, but in a lot of cases, it's true. So you basically have to train yourself to be at peace with the fact that you may talk to somebody with a horrendous belief system, and when you're done talking to them, they still have their horrendous belief system, and you'll go your separate ways thinking that you may have done no good at all. And I know for a lot of us who really dang care about like humanity and the future of the world, it's really difficult to not care whether that person walks out of the room advocating the enslavement of mankind. Like, I really want them to not. But the more that comes across, the harder it'll be for them to hear me. And that's true of everybody else, too. So to train yourself, and it's not completely like acting like you don't care at all. It's more like being at peace with whatever the outcome is. And I refer to this in Candles in the Dark as the interviewing the serial killer method. If you had a chance to interview somebody who like killed and ate his neighbors, first of all, that might be too creepy. But if you did it, you wouldn't go in saying, I'm going to give him a piece of his mind and tell him how bad he is. Well, what's the freaking point? You think he's going to go, oh, darn, it never occurred to me it was bad. He doesn't care. If your goal is to go in and to learn more about him and understand how he ticks and what the hell went wrong with his brain that he thought that was an okay way to be, and you don't have to talk, there's nothing emotional, there's no desperation in your voice of trying to talk him into something, you're just trying to understand better for yourself. The irony is when you can talk to other people in that tone of voice, they hear you way better. Because they can just sense, oh, this person isn't trying to bludgeon me over the head with what he believes. He's actually interested in what I believe. And that's why all of Candles in the Dark is about how to ask people questions and bring out of them their inner voluntarist instead of bludgeon them overhead. But there's another aspect to the being emotionally invested. Not only will you be way less effective, and you're not going to be getting the message to pretty much anybody, but you're basically going to torture yourself to death. Because the more desperate you are to get people to understand these really important ideas, and the more they push you away and go, you're just kind of crazy, the more frustrating it is. It's like, I'm trying to tell the world, like, how about peaceful coexistence? Why is that so hard? And they're getting mad, or calling you an extremist, or just walking away and not listening. And you get more and more angry. It took me a really long time to get to the point where I can talk to somebody who has status views, completely stupid views, and when I'm done and if they still have those views, okay, like, whatever. It's unfortunate. Wish you didn't. But that's not up to me. It's not under my control. And I'm going to butcher the quote. The serenity prayer, the thing about give me the strength to change what I can and the whatever to accept the things I can't change and the wisdom to know the difference or something. I butchered that pretty bad, but you get the general point. If you can do that when talking to people and go, I'm going to do what I can, knowing full well it isn't up to me, and what they believe, that's up to them. The irony is that, A, you'll be way more effective, and B, you'll torture yourself a whole lot less. And I see this, and I see this in the way a lot of pro-freedom people talk. They so desperately want people to understand something that's so stinking important. And when people don't hear it, or they have stupid responses, or they make excuses, or they seems like they heard it, and then 2 seconds later, they're saying stupid status stuff, it feels like torture. And I know, I've been a voluntarist for 27 years. When I started, there was one other person in the world who I knew in person who didn't believe in a ruling class. And that was it. Now there's events like this where there's thousands and thousands of people. But I know the frustration of thinking, this is really damn important, I want the whole world to know it, and nobody's listening. Well, now lots of people are listening, and it won't be everybody, and it won't be everybody right away. But it's really dang important that when you're talking to other human beings, again, they're not computers, it's not just data entry, you can't just go, there, I fixed your programming, now you're done, bye. It's so easy to focus on the stupidity and the hypocrisy and the evil of what statism, the belief in statism, entails. Because yes, it's messed up, it's horribly destructive, it's been causing horrendous injustice and suffering around the world for centuries. If all you can do is focus on how stupid their beliefs are, you're not going to accomplish anything. You have to understand the psychology of the person who possesses those stupid beliefs. And you have to understand your own psychology and how you react to that. And then you have to understand how those two psychologies have their interplay. And it's kind of obnoxious that we have to learn all this weird random stuff about psychology just to explain, don't attack people or take their stuff. Like, that shouldn't be that difficult to get people to go, oh yeah, that, okay, let's do that. But it is, because people aren't machines, they're not computers, they're these weird, irrational things. And it's, you know, if there's a surgeon who says, oh, you have this tumor and it's like really close to all important organs and it's going to kill you. We need that to not be there. It's like, okay, do you know how to carefully get that out? Well, never mind that. Look, it's really bad. I'm focused on the really bad thing. We need that really bad thing not to be there. Well, do you know how to get it out without killing the person? Look how bad that is. Give me that hatchet. It's like, yeah, a hatchet isn't going to help. You need to understand the bigger picture and how to help them get the crappy belief out of their own heads without them being attacked. They didn't choose their statism, their authoritarianism. They didn't choose that. Nobody did. They were indoctrinated and propagandized into it. But even though they didn't choose their belief, they are the only one who can choose to let go of it. And you need to remind yourself of that. You don't get to choose for them. And if they choose to cling to it, oh well, if you did what you could, walk away and be at peace with it. And if you view them as a victim of the lie and a carrier of the lie too, and you're trying to help them see the problem so they can fix the problem, good, you might actually do some good. But if you view them as, there's the thing I have to go change, you're not going to. And it does take time and effort to train yourself, and yes, it's completely unfair that when trying to explain political philosophy and morality, you have to like have a master's degree in psychology and all this weird stuff. Like, well, that's obnoxious. Yeah, it's obnoxious, but if you want to get through to people, there's a certain amount of that stuff that you have to learn. And if you want to learn way more about it, you can get my Candles in the Dark thing. And otherwise, if you want to argue with me about it, I'm going to spend most of the rest of this week up at My Rock, which is at the corner of the parking lot, which is now officially My Rock on the map. And I'll be there selling my book and things like that. For the sake of the world, I ask you to train yourself to do these things, but also for your own sake, because I know how horrendously horrible and painful and frustrating and infuriating it is to know things that the rest of the world doesn't yet, things that would make so many problems go away, and you so desperately want the world to know it. And I know how much it hurts when that's difficult. And the reality is, if you don't know how to drive on the ice and snow, you have to change your mind. Because you're not changing anything else until you do. So, thank you very much.